This is the Ray Lucia Show.
Coming to the bat for the answers here.
The one show that helps you make better money moves. The program all about your money, your business, and your life.
You guys talk about a lot of really good information that even I can understand.
Call Ray now at 844-RAY-SHOW, 844-RAY-SHOW. This is the Ray Lucia Show.
Thank you and welcome to the one talk show in America that helps you make better money moves. The program all about your money, your business, and your life. Somebody that's got a very limited amount. No, I'm just kidding.
What, a life?
I was going to say business.
Oh, business.
I wasn't going to talk about your limited
amount. I don't have a life. You
business,
know
I was going to say business sense, but that would be a lie because you got a very good business sense.
I think I do okay.
Even though you were an employee for so long, I had to sort of beat it into you at first, if you remember.
Yeah.
You were very risk intolerant.
Well, I was risk intolerant and cheap at the same time. So I didn't want to put my money at risk, and I didn't want to spend it.
You just reminded me of a couple of conversations we had early on.
Oh, boy.
But it worked. Next thing I know, you came home with a big, huge pearl white Escalade. Remember that?
Yeah. Well, it was even before that. It was this SUV. My wife couldn't believe it was even me. I said, guess who talked me into this? You said spend a little, and I did. And that was 15
years ago. I didn't tell you to buy an Escalade.
No.
But I went out and bought one.
You bought one.
They're great cars.
They were great cars. It was way more than I needed.
Yeah.
I don't want to.
Anyway, well, speaking of that, we want to make sure that we cover. There was an emailer that emailed us, and I want to get to this because you keep bringing it up, and I want to talk about it. And we only gave it a short shrift a couple of 3 days ago.
Yeah, I want to give it the attention it deserves, and it has to do with multiple sources of income. You said the other day that it's important for somebody to have multiple sources of income in retirement. Now, what I've noticed is that most people have Social Security, and they may have a pension, although pensions are not nearly as common.
Not very many have them anymore.
And so their only other income besides their Social Security is going to come from their portfolio. And a lot of times they have, this has nothing to do with the discussion, but they have the wrong strategy taking money out, the wrong withdrawal strategy. But even if they do, you had talked about the importance of having multiple sources of income. You listed some of those sources. We had an emailer who was asking us, and I apologize. I didn't bring it in here with me. I'm going to have to summarize it.
It's too long anyway, because I remember the email was like 2 pages.
Right, exactly. And he had different questions. But what it came down to was, why do you need multiple sources of income? What types of multiple sources of income are you talking about? And what is the problem if you don't have multiple sources of
income?
Well,
let me take the last one first, because, you know, people write in all the time, hey, Ray, can I get there from here?
Right.
It's a game we've been playing for 25 years.
Well, and that's kind of what this question was. Which.
And so you want to know if you can get there from here. I would suggest to you that you can't really answer that until you have enough protected sources of income. I don't think you get there at all, at least not psychologically. Because remember, this is not just a physical money game. This is something that where we have to manage behavior. And I'll tell you, it's a lot more fun in retirement when you got a check coming in or multiple checks coming in from multiple sources, so that if one of them either goes away or is reduced for whatever reason, you still know you've got the other ones. And that's really what we're talking about here.
It is. Now, we also talked about the other day buying pensions, things like annuities and other sources of guaranteed income. There are some people who say, okay, I got my Social Security. I need X amount of dollars more. Why not just purchase an annuity and be done with it? Now, you had said, I don't know if it was on the air or off the air, I even said that. I said, well, why not? You know, if you can get all the income you need, you know, you buy a life insurance policy to take care of your family, and then maybe why not buy an annuity, and that'll be it.
Well,
Social Security annuity, and then you have life insurance.
If you bought a joint inflation indexed annuity and a life insurance policy to replace what you would want your heirs to have after inflation, but you're going to be using up pretty much all of your money. You're giving I think, some real potential advantages. And that's why I believe in the multiple source of income as opposed to the single source of income. Now, if you could quadruple your Social Security benefit and have a cost of living adjustment, et cetera, but have you ever figured out what your Social Security is worth in terms of actual dollars invested?
You mean in terms of, well, I'm not sure what you mean.
Well, I'll tell you what I mean. If I've got my calculator out here, and let's say you and your spouse have a $50,000 per year Social Security benefit.
Yeah.
That's inflation adjusted at mm-hmm. a couple of percent per year, whatever the inflation rate is. Mm-hmm. And you could earn, 4% in your money after inflation. That's 2%. And if you live 35 years in retirement, that Social Security benefit's worth $1,249,093.
Total accumulation.
That's how much money you would have to have in the bank replace it.
Yeah.
So if you, and that's only $50,000. If you wanted to live on $150,000, you need $3.75 million, and then you also need enough money to buy a permanent life insurance policy to replace mm-hmm. that when all is said and done.
Yeah.
I think there's a less expensive way to do this.
Well, let's talk about some of these sources of income. All right, let's say I have Social Security. I have no pension. The only other thing that I have is my portfolio. I've rolled my 401k. I've got an
sure.
IRA. I got maybe some personal money. But what else are we talking about here?
Well, let's stay with the portfolio for just a second. A percentage of that portfolio, let's say starting out in retirement of 30-35%, should stay in a reasonably aggressive but yet dividend-paying stock portfolio.
Okay.
So if you have a $1 million portfolio and $350,000 is in equities per se, mm-hmm. you've got a dividend mm-hmm. yield of 2-3% on that $35,000 each year.
So there's some of your income.
So
there.
That's a source of income, and it's a fairly stable source, because while dividends are cut if you buy one stock, you buy Johnson & Johnson, well, if they have a bad time, they could cut the dividend. But if you buy the whole market, if you will, or a big portfolio of stocks, that 2-3% dividend's going to come in even if the market crashes.
Yes.
So there you've got your portfolio. Now, that portfolio, including the dividends, you do not touch for at least 15 years.
Remember? Leave it alone.
Remember my philosophy. So then if you flip over to the annuity, you bring up annuities. Mm-hmm. I think everyone should take a look at some form of annuitization, whether it's current, deferred, QLAC, fixed, variable, with all the whiz-bang bells and whistles, because you're foolish if you don't. Wade Fowle, Kitsis,
right.
Malevsky, Blanchett, all of these really famous, if you will.
They've all said the same thing.
They're all saying you should annuitize a percentage.
All right, so I've got 350 of my hypothetical million doing what it does in equities. I've got 650 left. What are we talking
about
now?
Well, let's say you took 250, 25%, and annuitized it. And that between for a joint life, you'd get somewhere, depending on your age, between $12,000 and $15,000 per year of income.
Let's say I'm 65, so that's probably about what it is.
So let's say it's 15 for simple math.
Okay, good.
So now, and then I would also advise individuals, if I were giving advice again, 25% in an alternative income source, which is non-correlative with the stock market and with the annuity, per se.
And why is that important?
Well, it's important because the annuity may or may not keep pace with inflation. The stock market's going to be volatile, and we don't want to touch it.
Right.
We want dividends reinvested. So I'd like to have it, and I usually talk about an endowment model here. Follow what the endowments have done. And the endowments have taken a substantial portion. And by the way, many of them, it's substantially more than 25%, but I would not recommend that.
No.
25% in other income-producing asset classes. Real estate is the one that I'm most comfortable with. You could certainly look at hedge funds and stuff like that, but that's where it gets a lot more complicated in terms of your evaluation. Real estate's actually pretty simple when you think about it. You go into a marketplace where prices are either depressed or prices relative to rents are reasonable. And you do that based on a cap rate.
Right.
What if I paid full cash for this piece of property, what after all expenses is my income stream going to deliver to me? And I would say start at 6% and go up from there. If you can get 6, 7, or 8, I think you're in some high cotton. I mean, really, 6% is pretty good. So another 15,000 bucks a year would be coming in.
You got about 15% left of your million. What other source do you use for that? Is that just something like, you know, cash, something safe that you can draw down as a bucket one?
That's my strategy, because I don't want to touch the dividends and the stocks, but I do have the ability to draw income from the annuity and income, in this example, from the real estate. In that example, I'm getting three quarters of the income that I need.
And you're taking the dividend income too, are you not?
Not from the stocks.
Okay, so I think we need to explain that.
I'll explain it when we come back.
All right, let's do that.
I don't want to get short shrifted from Adam and the guys in the back room. I'll be talking during the break.
They get very angry. If you don't hit it right on the button, they get very upset.
Which gives me about 9 seconds to get out. So stick around, folks. This is the Ray Lucia Show. See, I got 5 seconds to spare.
Business owner, want a bpreneur, or just looking to manage your assets? You found the right place. Biz Talk Radio.
Hey, welcome back, folks. This is the Ray Lucia Show, helping you make better money moves. If you want to give us a call, actually, it's a little better to email us this hour, raylucia.com. Yeah. RAYLUCIA.com.
Now, we were talking, Ray, before the break about multiple sources of income, and you had given a couple of examples. You took a hypothetical million-dollar portfolio.
Yeah, and by the way, you don't have to have $1 million to do
this. No, it's just easy math. Yeah. That's all it is, because then we know the percentages and all that stuff. Let's just take that. You said what first thing you would do is parcel off $350,000. Again, this is just hypothetical numbers. Example. $350,000, 35%, and dedicate that to equities. You would leave it alone. You would leave it alone.
It's critically important that you leave it alone for that 15-year time period with all dividends reinvested.
And I want to come back to that.
Don't take the dividends early in your retirement.
And I want to come back to that. You said another, I think, $250,000, 25%, to some sort of pensionized, you know, maybe an annuitized, guaranteed income of some kind that you can take right now.
Right. All right? And there's a lot of different choices there, and we assumed it would generate a 5 or a 6%
something like
distribution.
So there's some of your actual income coming from that.
Right.
You said you might take another, I think it was 25%, no more than
that. I did take 25%.
And dedicate that to something that's
alternative income
but
sources.
Still providing an income.
Correct.
And you don't want to get too fancy or complicated without some help, but you had said real estate because you like real estate. It's been good for you. Again, it's probably good to have some help on this, or at least some advice. There was another 15% left, and that you would put, as we were saying going into the break, into something liquid and safe that you could just draw all the way down.
Well, you're going to have to, because remember, if you start out with the premise that you're going to take a 4% distribution, so 4% of $1 million is $40,000. So in this example, we've got 15 grand coming from some kind of annuity, and we have another 15 grand coming from real estate. And with $1 million or $250,000, you can buy some nice real estate that's low leveraged. Mm-hmm. So I think that's all reasonable.
So I need 10 grand a year out of this.
So you're $10,000 short. So if I want $10,000, and let's say that, you know, $10,000, if I want that and payments for the next 15 years, and I can earn 3% of my money or 2% of them, that takes about another $125,000.
Okay, so $125,000. Now I've got my income set. I've got it set for the next 10, 12, however many years. A couple things here, too. You said don't touch the equity portion. You put $350,000, let the dividends reinvest. You might, at some point along the line, Ray, consider some value averaging, if you have some good years that you didn't expect, maybe to buy yourself a little more time. We won't get into that, but that could be a potential.
You could do that, but I would always make the assumption that you didn't.
Yeah, okay, and that's what we're
doing. Let me go back, because to summarize, because the numbers aren't working out. It's $150,000 of, quote, safe money, and that's going to last you 12, 13, 14, 15. We said 15 years. It depends on how much you inflate your income need. At a couple of percent, probably $150,000 does just fine. So to give you the rundown, it's $250,000 in annuity, $150,000 in bond ladders, CDs, cash, money markets, whatever. It's $250,000 in real estate or other alternative income sources and $350,000 in stocks. That is not a recommendation for you to go run with. This is all strictly a hypothetical example. But what we just did is we took care of a pretty much an inflation-adjusted $40,000 income stream from a million-dollar portfolio for the next 15 years.
Yes. Now, you've left the $350,000 alone on your stock side. You said dividend-paying stocks, but you're not going to take the dividends. Let's talk about that for just a second, how you want to structure that. Because you said, let's leave the dividends alone. How long are we leaving them alone for, and what are we doing with this $350,000 of equities that we're not touching?
So if I have $350,000 and I leave it alone for 15 years, what will the stock market do over the next 15 years? Answer, I have no freaking clue. Nobody does. But generally speaking, and we can only answer these in general terms, and I'll address the other part of this if it doesn't. Generally speaking, let's say we got 8%, all right? So 8%, 15 years from now, it's worth about $1,000,001. The Standard & Poor's 500 dividend yield is about 2.5%. I might tweak it a little bit and go a little higher dividend, but let's just say it's 2.5%. So you're out 15 years from now. Let's pretend that you need an income stream. How much income do you need? Well, $40,000 today, 15 years from now, let's say 2% inflation, means you need about $54,000 from your portfolio. Where are we going to get it? Well, you're still going to get $15,000 from this annuity, right?
You've still got the real estate or whatever your alternative is.
So $54,000 minus 15 means you got $39,000. Your real estate, which was a 6 cap, you remember that? That means a 6% yield. 15 years from now, do you think it's still producing at least the same rate of return? Probably more.
I would hope.
I mean, you've paid down mortgages. You've had rent increases.
If all works well, yeah, if all works well.
Obviously, nothing is guaranteed.
No, I want to emphasize
that. If the real estate appreciates at 2% per year, that's
over,
all.
And this is over 15 years.
Then the $300,000 that you invested, or excuse me, the $250,000 you invested, all cash, because we didn't assume leverage, I guess, in this one.
Yeah.
Is worth $400,000, $350,000.
Okay.
So let me figure it out. So $250,000 at 2% inflation 15 years from now is worth about $350,000.
Okay. All right.
So you have $350,000, and that's generating the 6% yield, right? So there's $21,000.
Well, now you're only, what, $18,000 that you got to make up?
Yeah. What was the stock market worth?
$1,000,001.
What's 2.5% of that?
$20,000.
Now you can take the dividend income and you're set. And you're pretty much set for life. Because, first of all, you were 65 when this started.
You're
80 years old right now. You've had an inflation-adjusted income. You're now set for the next umpteen years. What is the worst that can happen here? Well, there's a lot of worsts that can happen.
You could have a rotten 15 years.
You could have a rotten, oh, there you go. That's really the worst that can happen. Because if you bought a property for all cash, what's the likelihood of you getting zero rent 15 years from now? Zero.
Yeah.
Pretty much zero.
I'd say.
You hire a property manager, you take care of the property. All right, so the stock market could have a crappy 15 years. You've heard me talk about this before.
Well, there are cycles where it does.
And if you have a crappy, first of all, if you have a good 15-year period, you've got way more money than you could ever imagine.
You're fine.
In that portfolio. You don't need, dividends will be more than you probably need to spend, period. But if you have a crappy 15 years, you may not have the dividend income to support that extra $18,000. And you want to leave your stock market money alone. So what do? You sell your real estate. You have $350,000 of cash. That will buy you the next 10 years of income. So now, 10 years later, it's 25 years. What's the worst that the stock market has done since 1950 over a 25-year period? You want to take a guess? 7.94%. I'll give you that math when we come back. Don't go away.
BizTalk News wants to feed.
This is BizTalk Radio.
Keep listening to this station or take us on the go by downloading our free smartphone app, BizTalk Radio.
Welcome back, folks. This is the Ray Lucia Show. I thought we swore this song off on this program a long time ago.
Did
because,
we?
Well, one of the radio station owners didn't like Helter Skelter.
Oh, didn't we get something from one of the, yeah.
Remember that?
Well, there's nothing wrong with the song. It just had the unfortunate.
Yeah.
But that wasn't McCartney's fault. That wasn't the Beatles' fault.
No, it was, what's his name? Dennis Wilson.
Dennis Wilson. He's the one who invited the...
Yeah. It was Dennis Wilson.
Well, he's the one who befriended
Wasn't it his
guys.
House or something?
Oh, no, no. It was the Folgers' house.
Oh, okay.
And it was rented, the Sharon... What's her name?
Stone.
Tate.
No, I'm just
rented.
Kidding.
You know, that was 50 years ago.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. Nobody knows what we're talking about much.
Charlie
anymore.
Manson.
Yeah.
Look it up.
Chuck.
Yeah. Look it up. They've done a bunch of documentaries.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
very, it's, very, it's fascinating stuff, but it's
I guess it is. But anyway,
gruesome.
That's what they wrote all over the walls. All right. So back to you had said the worst 25-year period of time in the stock market.
Since 1950.
Since 1950. So in the modern era, if you want to call it that. Returned 7.94,
according to Burton Malkiel.
Call it 8%. 7.94 if you want to be exact. Rate of return over 25 years. You were making an assumption that somebody was going to retire at the worst possible time. Stock market takes a dive. Their 350 goes down over the next couple of years, whatever it is. But over 25 years, we've backed it way up. What's that $350,000 worth?
So I was counseling John Dean. When he retires in 10 years with his $1 million, I said, well, John, here's what I think you should do because here's what I would do. I would take a portion of it. Now, John wants to annuitize it all, but
no.
I was talking him down. I said, take 25% of it and annuitize it. They're safe, guaranteed. You get about, call it $15,000 a year for you and Chris.
What kind of, what are we talking about? What kind of annuity? For people who are just,
I
mean, you have different types. You listen, you know, they're variable.
Let's just say it's a life annuity.
A life annuity
okay?
of some kind.
Of some kind.
All right. Guaranteed
yes.
by the life insurance company.
Guaranteed. And maybe there's inflation. Maybe there's not.
All right. Whatever.
I assume not.
Let's assume not.
And then I said, take another $250,000 and go out and buy a property for, let's say, cash.
Like a rental home.
Yeah.
Somewhere.
And you should be able to get a 6% net yield on that property. Now, you've got to hire a property manager. You know me. I think it's a risky business, but it doesn't have to be. And when you buy all cash, the risk goes down quite a bit, doesn't it?
It would tend to.
So if it were me, because I'm a little more risk tolerant than you, I'd buy two of them. And put a $125,000 mortgage on.
So you would leverage those.
Yes, I would.
You wouldn't pay $250 of cash for one. You'd pay $125 and $125 for two.
Right.
You'd have two mortgages for $125,000. You would pay the mortgage, and you would take whatever's left over.
No, my tenant would pay the mortgage.
Well, yes.
And I'd still get at least $15,000, maybe $20,000.
What if your tenant, what if you know, here's the what ifs. I don't want to get sidetracked.
No, it's okay.
But, you know, here's what the thinking is. You got to have some guts in some of this stuff, I guess. You do. What if the tenant moves out? What if it goes unrented for 2 months? What if, you know, you buy in an area that all of a sudden gets depressed? You know, there's certain areas like Texas or somewhere where the oil, yeah, you've seen that. And all of a sudden you can't get the rents that you want. I mean, all this stuff would go through my head.
I have to show you some of the returns on the self-storage facilities that my partner Carlos bought way back 25 years ago.
Well, you know, I thought of that. I know you too well.
You don't even want to bring it up because it's too crazy good.
I thought of it. But
you're right. There is risk, and you've got to be willing to take that risk. I would suggest to you that if you look at areas that are hot areas for rent, and you've seen rents go up, and then you go back to the last two recessions and take a look at how much rents had to go down in order for you to keep your tenant. Because you don't usually lose tenants unless you did a bad job of looking at them up front or somebody else built something across the street that's nicer for less money. right?
Yeah.
So you got to go back, and this is just, it's all part of the protocol when you're buying real estate. I didn't want to get into that, but I'm getting into it.
I'm sorry.
So you go back and you look at what the rents had to, how much you had to take it in the shorts and for how long. And you make sure that you've reserved enough money to cover that. Because sooner or later, rents go up. Just go back to the housing census bureau, whatever they call it, and look at what houses sold for and rented for 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, and see what they're renting for today. Rents always go up over time. Sometimes, intermittently, they go down. And you need to be prepared for that. That's why it's an alternative investment.
Okay.
And that's why you don't over-lever it. Now, you asked the other question. In this example, if you drained down your safe money over 15 years, and if you had a crappy first 15 years with your stock market money, beginning in year 16, you needed an income stream of, I think it was $54,000 from your portfolio to buy what $40,000 bought 15 years earlier.
But we had a rotten 15 years. We didn't get 8%.
So we don't liquidate stocks.
We wait?
We wait. But we do liquidate those two rental houses, or one rental house now and one rental house later. Houses are easy to sell. And yeah, you may not get a huge sales price, but I only assumed, 2% growth on an all-cash property? I think that's reasonable. It'd be like a $250,000 property would be worth $325,000. So notwithstanding taxes, I know we can get really technical and all that stuff, but you'd have about an asset worth $325,000, $350,000 at the end of 15 years. You sell it. You need to supplement your income. You needed how much then? Well, in 15 years, you put 2% inflation on a $40,000 income need today. That's when you need the $54,000. Sorry. So $54,000 minus the $15,000 you're still getting from the annuity
takes
is
you to $39,000.
$39,000. Where am I going to get that? Well, I'm going to sell the real estate. I've got, say, after taxes, $325,000. So how long will that $325,000 last at $39,000 in payments if I can earn, call it 3.5% of my money?
That's over a 10% rate of withdrawal rate. That's scary.
Yeah, because you're going to spend all the money.
Exactly.
And it lasts 11 years. Say it lasts 10 years. So you now have had your stock market money and your annuity, and that's all that's left.
I've already spent down. My real estate proceeds
are
gone. It's gone.
The safe money's gone. The real estate money's gone. But you still have your stock market money, and you still have your annuity paying you $15,000. What is your money?
The stock market money, by the way, has been sitting there now for 25 years. I'm 90 at this point.
And you had $350,000 in the market.
25 years ago.
You picked the worst day since 1950 to invest. And you earned 7.94%, or the worst month, or the worst year, or whatever.
Over 25 years.
And you had $350,000 to start with over 25 years. You now have $2,364,000 in your equity portfolio.
That's assuming I left it alone. Didn't add from it, didn't take anything out of it.
You die. Your family gets $2.4 million. The annuity goes away because it was a life annuity.
Yep.
So the question then always becomes, did you leave your kids richer or poorer than you are today? Today you have $1 million. So if you have $1 million and you want it to keep pace with a 2% inflation over the next 25 years, you would need to leave your kids $1,640,000.
Well, I just left them 2 point something.
Case is now closed. And that's what I think you should do. So that we started out multiple sources of income. Do you see how critically important having that real estate income and having the annuity income and then being able to take principal and earnings from a safe account to buy you time? Because here's what we know about the stock market, and this dates back to the 1800s. If you have a really good 15-year period, it's usually followed by a not-so-good 15-year period. That's what you want. If you can pick the day to retire, pick it like 10 years ago today, all right? 10 years ago today, you'd be feeling pretty good about your money. But if you pick a bad 15 years, like 1999, right? Those next 15 years were not so hot. But the next 15 years typically are followed by a really good 15-year period. So even though you may be panicked at the end of 15 years because you didn't get up to that 1,000,001 number that we talked about, you got up to $750,000, it's still okay because you had the alternative source of income that could be liquidated to fill up the safe bucket to buy you another 10 years, and you're almost certain that those next 10 years are going to be fantastic years, and you'll end up with $2.4 million.
All hypothetical. These are just numbers we're working with, but this is to prove a point. This is to demonstrate a point as to why you need multiple sources of income.
You want to learn more about it? Shoot me an email, raylucia.com. Click on the Ask Ray button. We'll be back right after this.
Hi, this is Fred Dreyer, former...
All the episodes on demand at biztalkradio.com.
Down by the river.
I'm going to tell you a story.
Welcome back, folks. This is the Ray Lucia Show. Now, I know we talked about a lot of numbers, and I know it's hard on television to, you know, comprehend numbers when we talk about them, and I apologize. But I think it's really important stuff, and if you can get the podcast, I would go back and listen very, very carefully. Maybe take some notes yourself. Again, I want to emphasize that all of this is strictly hypothetical, based on historical data that may not come true in the future. But doggone it, it's pretty darn cool, I think.
I think it's very cool, and I do hope you get a chance to maybe listen to the podcast. Or a lot of people do that anyway. Go back and listen to it again.
It does take some guts. It takes a little bit of guts to.
It takes some mental guts in the same sense that it takes guts to buy your first home.
Yeah.
A lot of people would not argue that if you buy a home and you're going to live in it for the next, you know, 15 years. I mean, to me, that doesn't take a lot of guts. It does at first because psychologically you're probably paying more.
Well,
and it's
if you did like I did, you bought houses that you really couldn't afford.
Well,
at the
okay,
time.
But maybe you know, maybe that's true. But it's more of a psychological gut check than anything else. You got to be able to stay. You got to have staying power. You can't say I'm getting into this alternative investment and 3 years later I don't like this anymore.
That's absolutely right, because
that's
as you well know, and I talked about the endowment model.
Uh-huh.
Most of those endowments, like Yale and Harvard, whose performance was off the charts for years and years and years, and so many individuals started to say, well,
I could do
Yale
that.
Can do it and Harvard can do it. All I'm right. going to do it. And I can even tell you that Yale and Harvard and other endowments have had trouble because the alternative space, especially with hedge funds and so forth, has been a very difficult place to play. It's just like the international and emerging markets have been a very difficult place to play. But over a 30-year period of time, I think you'll find, Blackstone. Blackstone came out, I think I read it this morning or yesterday, and said the best trade today is in the emerging markets. And, you know, people that follow this stuff go, what, are you kidding me? I'm not putting my money there. But Blackstone, pretty well-read group, they think emerging markets is a good trade. I don't do that.
That's not a recommendation. We don't do
that. What I do is I say, yeah, it could be. So therefore, you should allocate a certain percentage of your diversified portfolio to emerging markets. And international? Yeah, it could be. And you should allocate some there. S&P? Yeah, it could be. Dividend-paying stocks? Yeah, it could be. And so on and so forth. And that's what I think you should do too.
Get a little bit of everything, in many cases, diversify. Like John Belushi in Animal House walking down, you know, in the cafeteria. He takes an apple, stuffs the sandwich in his mouth, puts this in a plate. By the end of it, he's got a whole plate full of stuff that he can throw at everybody else.
Or Ray Lucia at the Chart House with their salad bar.
Is the Chart House still around?
No,
because it was
so.
The greatest blue cheese dressing.
The best salad bar ever
had. It was.
But have you been to Fogo de Chao?
No.
Okay, I've got a $50 gift certificate.
Is that in Las Vegas?
We've got one here in San Diego.
Okay, so they're all over the place.
But they've got a great salad bar, too. And they've got the Brazilian, you know, meat. They come around and cut at your table.
I go nuts in a salad bar. Don't get me near a salad bar.
Well, you'll eat so much salad, you won't be able to eat the
meat. That's the problem.
All right. Sorry about the food talk.
Do we have time to get to this email?
Yeah, I think so.
It's sort of long, and I apologize, James. I think I talked about it a couple of days ago. It was about a large Roth conversion in 2025. The deal is this. He's planning to retire in 2024. All right.
Okay.
So he says that mentions the tax rate.
Oh, taxes are going up.
Tax rates expire in 2025. Now, what he wants to do, he says the tax rates are going to go up, he believes. He's thinking of converting $315,000, which is going to max all the way up his 24% tax bracket from his IRA, converting $315,000 to the Roth and pay that 24% tax before he figures it's going to go up in the next year. So I guess his question is, is that a good idea? He says, I know that's a big tax hit in 1 year, but I think the 24% tax rate will be a good deal compared to future years.
Well, why is he doing it in 1 year if he's got until 2025, or is he doing that every year?
No, it looks like he's waiting until, because he's not going to do it till he retires.
Oh, well, then start doing it.
Because
that.
He's probably making an income, and if he retires,
yeah, but maybe, he can't more do than the 24% bracket right now.
Well, where's the 24% bracket?
I can't answer this. What's his name again?
James.
James, we have to talk about this because there's so many different factors. First off, we talked, I don't know if it was this hour, you just blew your Medicare. You're going to be paying like, you know, $5,000 a year for you and $5,000 a year for your wife in Medicare instead of like three.
Yeah.
Total. So you're going to be, there's $7,000 of additional taxes you probably didn't think of for that particular year.
Just for doing that.
And you know, there's other potential tax issues. But if his goals are to leave the money to his kids who are just as rich as him and in the same tax bracket, it could work. But I've also talked about the tax arbitrage. Many times, if you are going to die someday, you're going to leave money to your heirs. Now, depending on how much you leave them, and how much income they have at the time, it may make sense for him just to deal with the required minimum distributions and not worry about having a tax-free Roth. Like in my case, if I had multi-millions of dollars that way, I've got four kids and five grandkids. That's nine beneficiaries that I could leave. I could leave each of my beneficiaries $200,000, and I use up $1.8 million and $200,000 and a rollover stretch IRA to them with their required minimum distribution is not going to cause their tax brackets to go up. So if they happen to be in a 12% bracket and I'm going to use up the 24% bracket, simple math says I'm paying twice as much in taxes than my kids would.
Yeah, I suspect you would, without knowing any more information, you would look more, if all else being equal, you would look more at doing this over a series of years.
Yes.
If you're going to do it, don't do it all. Don't wait till 2024. Because you know something? Taxes could change in 2020.
That
we don't
is
know.
True.
We don't know what's going to happen in 2021.
That
so
is true.
Maybe, just do it incrementally. Take, you know, over the next 6-7 years.
Yeah, I love the Roth IRA. Don't get me wrong. But when you do the mathematics, remember, you're going to spend $75,000 in taxes today. And you've got to factor in what you could have done with that $75,000 over the next, you know, 5, 6, 7 years. And most of the time, it will take about 15, 18 years to break even on that, on the Roth. So if he's leaving the money for his kids and grandkids, maybe it's a brilliant move because it's great to inherit a Roth IRA because you pay no tax and you only have to take a required minimum distribution of a few percentage points.
Based on your age.
And the rest continues to grow tax-free.
Right.
So if it's for the kids, I don't have a major problem with it, unless they're just as rich as you are. Out of time.
We're done.
We blew a whole day's
it
show.
It was great.
folks, if you want to email me, go to raylucia.com, R-A-Y-L-U-C-I-A.com. Click on the Ask Ray button. Bye-bye.
You're listening to The Ray Lucia Show, bringing you the best in money information, answering questions about your biggest financial challenges, talking about your money, your business, and your life. Ray Lucia is not a registered representative of or affiliated with any securities brokerage or investment advisory firm. The views and opinions expressed by Ray and his guests are not necessarily those of this station or its sponsors and should not be construed as legal, tax, or investment advice. You should always consult with the appropriate advisors before making any financial decisions.
This is Biz Talk Radio, America's home for business talk.